The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Euro 2012, Day 11, Group C. No Limp Bizkit, but a bit half-baked between Spain and Croatia, while for Italy, a game full of fortune and with a motto in the middle. A bit like a Chinese cookie. Pod reflects on Monday's action, then looks forward to Group D. England, Ukraine, France and Sweden. Who's going out? And worst, who's going to face Spain? Those questions and others in today's Football Daily.
And we're off. Mind that seagull, John Ashdown.
There's no such thing as a seagull.
I'm sorry.
No, they're gulls. They just live by the sea. People often call them seagulls, but they're just gulls who live by the sea.
Right. Already we're off to a controversial start. John Ashdown there. James Horncastle's here with us. He's staring at the gulls.
Yeah.
They, you know.
Big birds.
Yeah.
Not a great wingspan, but no. Decent.
Right.
Often hit you with stuff.
Right.
Okay. Can fly into you as well.
They certainly can. And here is Rob Smythe.
What about seaweed?
Yes.
No, there is such a thing as seaweed. That's weeds that live in the sea.
Right. Is a seashell just a shell?
I imagine so, yeah.
Sea creatures are just creatures.
No, I would say they were
sea creatures. Horses, just horses. And what about sea cucumbers?
No, I think it's mostly just seagulls.
Sea lions
don't exist.
Pretty much not lions. Right. I think we should probably stop with the sea, because otherwise it's all going to go.
Can
we
talk about sea biscuit?
Sea biscuit, there you go. That ties in nicely. And Group C. There we go. Oh, look, that's what was happening today.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Spain, Croatia, and it was Italy, Ireland. And Rob. First of all, the Spain-Croatia game, frustrating for you, frustrating.
I kind of feel like Spain are having a parody of themselves now, to be honest. It's just strange, they're such a good side, and yet they came so close. Rakitic missed a sitter, and a fraction before Navas' goal, 4 minutes to go,
a clear penalty.
Yeah, the kind of penalty that only Mike Dean, the heroic Mike Dean, has the courage to give when a player's tugging another, but he basically had him in an arm lock almost. And for a team that good to leave it that close for their approach, I don't know. I think it's kind of an ongoing debate now. Some people, you either adore Spain or you're just tired of them. And you kind of feel like if you say they're boring, you're a bit of a Philistine. But it's not just whether they're boring. How could this be the best approach for a team with that many good players?
Well, back in the World Cup, we dubbed it the tiki-taka Taliban. Of course, this idea that...
They're even worse than they were now.
You think? The thing is, it's not like they have a duty to provide us with some kind of example of pure football or whatever. But from your point of view, they're doing themselves a disservice.
Yeah,
they
this
could.
Is the point, you see. I mean, they can toss two fingers to anyone who doesn't like their approach, but is it the best approach for them? I don't see how it can be. Pletikosa today didn't have a save to make, apart from long range and from really prohibitive angles until Navas' goal. Is this Spanish team really better than they were 4 years ago? Are Barcelona really better than they were 3 or 4 years ago? I don't think so.
But they're missing David Villa, of course. That's one of the problems.
Yeah, but that's but then again, if they had Villa, they've got players who can fulfill a not dissimilar role, and they don't play them.
Yeah.
It just seems to become this grand art.
He went
project
with Torres today.
Yeah, well, that's a different debate entirely, and one that I found equally strange. If Torres is the best centre forward Spain have got, then... don't know, they have many good centre forwards.
Right.
But Llorente looks a fantastic player. And I hate this tedious crap about plan B, but he does at least allow them to put the odd cross in. More to the point, I think he does the fundamentals better than Torres at the moment. I'd like to hear the logic of him sticking with Torres. I don't know.
Shots on target, 15-7. So, you know, the Croatia had their chances. Possession, 72% to 28%. That's classic Spain stuff. Pass accuracy, 89%. For Spain and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There you go. They topped the group. But given the amount of chances, the number of times you went, ooh, Spain nearly out there, whoever finishes second in Group D might fancy their chances.
Well, this is a stupid thing, though. I don't think anyone can beat them. Even though they're playing within themselves, I know this isn't a popular view, and I think it's fair to say they're not as good as they were in 2010, certainly not in 2008. But even Croatia's game plan was pretty much immaculate. Croatia are a good side. They planned, Bilic's substitutions were perfectly timed in terms of his basic plan was to keep it 0-0 for as long as possible. He got that right. They created two really big chances, and Spain didn't play well, and Spain still won. I don't know. I think it would need a pretty... This, I said in a minute, but I think it would need a pretty perfect storm for them to be beaten, personally.
Mm-hmm. John, you were watching very much the Italy game while all this Spanish stuff was going on. And James, you were kind of across both of them. Is that right?
Straddling.
Oh, yeah. Straddling Group C. Mm. And well, what did you make of it?
Well, I thought Ireland started quite brightly. They looked quite threatening. They had a few breaks. Opening 9 seconds, I think Pirlo was robbed by Doyle, and you thought there was panic within the Italian ranks. But Shea Given's just had a terrible tournament. I think
he's had more off days than the Greek workforce.
Yes,
mm. But. Italy, equally, I think the first 30 minutes they were in a state of pure panic, and the last 20 or so as well. So, I mean, that's a really worrying thing for them. When they do play, they look one of the better sides there. But they just seem to have this anxiety waiting to come along and trip them up.
Yeah, it was strange because the whole rationale for Prandelli changing the system ahead of this game was so that Italy would have more control and exert sort of influence through possession. And they looked more threatened, more at risk than they did against Spain and Croatia, apart from, say, maybe the second half against Croatia. But they got the job done, which is the sort of irony of it. And I think Cassano played very well until he came off. I thought he had a very good spell leading up to the goal. I thought he there was that tremendous pass to Di Natale under pressure. Di Natale then forced a save from an acute angle. You saw Cassano then try the goalkeeper again. Given spilled it. And then the corner, and the smallest man on the pitch managed to get a head away. Given flaps at it, and goal.
Flapped at it like a gull. John, what did you think? How about the Balotelli goal, eh?
That was fantastic, yeah. I thought he had a real impact when he came on. His physicality and his pace seemed to unsettle the Ireland defenders when they just sort of got into a happy stride towards that last sort of five, 10 minutes. It was, I mean, it's exactly as James said. They seemed just, with about sort of half an hour to go, they started to get becalmed and kind of thought eyes were sort of straying towards the match in Gdansk, and they were sort of thinking, well, our job's kind of done now. Let's kind of just hope, let's hold this and see what happens. And all that meant was that Ireland sort of thought, well, we're not going to let you just do that. We're going to come and try and knock you out. And that's when Italy really kicked into this blind panic mode. And it was only when Balotelli scored that wonderful, wonderful volley that it settled down again.
Mm. Well, do you think the right two teams went through from the group?
Yeah, just about. Croatia were excellent. There'll be teams in the quarterfinals clearly already are who aren't as good as them. But
yeah,
I think
say that
just about. Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry, Rob, but I was going to say that Croatia you'd think would have qualified from certainly two of the other groups.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought Modric had quite a decent but short tournament. I thought he was excellent in the second half against Italy when he played sort of further up the pitch. And again, tonight, his outside of the foot pass for Rakitic was sweet.
It certainly was. He might be coming up against a lot of Spanish opposition in his near future, so the papers are saying. But that's not Euro 2012 talk.
No, I was just going to say there's a bit strange kind of revisionism surrounding Modric. A year ago, he was kind of the great talent waiting to go to a big club, and now after people seem to be kind of fancy footballing him, saying, well, he's only got 4 assists or whatever, he's just a glorious footballer. You could put him in any team and he'd be outstanding, I think.
All right, then. Now, very shortly, we're going to be talking about who is going to be ending up facing Spain and who's going to be ending up facing Italy. Before that, though, I just want to mention a couple of listeners' posts. Celez says, Germany-Greece going to be an awkward night in the palace. What with it being Jubilee year and all. That's actually not as funny. You're laughing, though, Producer Ben. Producer Ben's laughing. And, Rob, you're laughing at Producer Ben.
I was laughing at the fact he, yeah, that's
there. Well, that's a result, isn't it? Neil Part wants to know, what can you tell us about Udinese owner Pozzo, who looks like he's about to buy Watford? This is a very curious thing, isn't it? James, what do you know about this?
I think there's been talk about this for a year or so, and it was denied. But yeah, I think it's quite positive for Watford. He's done something similar with Granada in Spain. He used it as a kind of feeder club where their excellent scouting system would find players from South America, send them there, got Granada promoted, and those players then come back and do well, either on loan again in Serie A, like Luis Muriel, or I don't think Cuadrado, but he's an example, and then they're coming back to Udinese, so when they sell all their best players this year, they'll have another sort of fresh batch again. So if Watford can benefit from that, I think it's all the good.
All right, there you go. Watford, potential feeder club for a feeder club in Serie A. Excellent news. Simon Buttress says, ooh, discussion point for pod, UEFA's disgraceful rank of priorities between racism and guerrilla marketing. This is Nicholas Bentner's pants.
Look, I'd like to know what UEFA don't rank above racism, basically. It's just getting ridiculous now, isn't it?
Hmm.
Like, was it Messi saying hello to his mum? Bentner wears some pants, and they're all... I mean, what do you have to do to actually... get fined less than you do for racism, I don't know.
Hmm.
He's got good taste in pants. Remember when he fell out of that nightclub and he had this
his trousers were down that day as well. I don't know what brand they were.
Maybe that's what started it.
Hmm. Yeah. Perhaps it was. Would you like to just strike a note of moral outrage there, John? Why not?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a complete and utter disgrace.
Right,
I mean, you can't say how much... There's absolutely no justification for it whatsoever.
It was, can I say though, a remarkably stupid thing for him to do.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's against the rules, but
is it also because he is demonstrably the person doing it? Whereas when you're fining the FA for fans, there's this feeling of you're actually punishing not the people who are doing it. Whereas, no,
yeah, no, I think you can. Well, it's easy to point the you can blame Benton for it.
Well,
the
yeah,
pants are
his
fault.
Yeah.
Whereas, you can't... Well, maybe they should wade into the crowd and start pulling a few more people out, because...
Why, indeed.
Well, Bilic was strong on that, wasn't he, in his pre-match press conference. He wanted to disassociate the Croatians from the racist chanting that apparently had dogged their Italy game.
Yeah, well, we were all over that in last night.
Oh,
James, clearly you haven't listened to that one.
Christ.
All right. Oh, here's another thing you won't have caught in yesterday's pod, where we were talking about how this is potentially the greatest tournament ever, because, you know, it's just like that was the greatest season ever, the last one, and all that. But here's Johnny Late, who has actually got a memory, rare thing among football fans. He says, thinking about it, Euro 2004 is remembered for Greece, but there were some great stories as well. Zidane's last 2 minutes against England, including vomit. The arrival of Rooney, the Denmark-Sweden biscuit thingy you're all talking about. Ledley hit King going home and exposing John Terry to the mighty Postiga. That penalty spot, and then lots of Greece. 96 had three Lions and all that. 92 had the Danes. 1988... Comedy Robson, Van Basten, and the Dutch finally getting the trophy they deserved. And 84, the crowning of the great French team.
He's missed out the great modern European Championship, 2000.
Yeah, well, that was the one that was mentioned yesterday, actually. Tell us why, Rob. Why was that the great modern championship?
There are so many reasons. It was just, I think, as much as anything, there was a real mood of attacking football around that time. The Champions League of 1990,000.
Especially from Italy in that great semi-final with Holland.
Yeah, okay. But the Champions League of 1990,000 had loads of goals. I just think there was a mood of attacking football. And also, more important than anything, there was just a collection of extremely good players somewhere near their peak.
That's a very fair point.
96, I thought. A lot of players who were kind of young in 96 kind of have fully come to fruition in 2000.
2000?
I don't think we'll ever see a better... kind of people of, I was going to say people of our age, we'll never see a better tournament, I don't think.
Really? There's so many years ahead of us, Rob. So many tournaments to enjoy. But this one, okay, maybe you don't have that vintage crop of players, but it's been an absolutely blinding spectacle so far.
Yeah, a few people have said that, has it? I think it's been pretty good, kind of around as good as Euro 2008. The only problem with hailing a tournament after the group stage
is... Oh, yeah, it was a good one, 2008.
The legacy is pretty much defined by the knockout games. Kind of the legacy is maybe one part group stage, four part knockout game.
Oh, right.
Maybe, that's what I always think. See, it's kind of, I always think it's a bit dangerous to hail. There was one of the recent World Cups, I forget which one, but it turned out to be an absolute stinker, and the group stages were actually pretty good. And I think it might be 06, and we're saying, isn't this wonderful? And by the end, everyone's just fast asleep.
Yeah, I lied to that. It's kind of the moments that make the tournament as well, isn't it? And that hasn't, and that they occur in the knockout rounds generally, I would say.
Yeah, Andy Carroll's last minute widow against Spain, that kind of thing.
Karagounis crossing himself mentally.
Right. But yeah, you mentioned a couple of moments already. I can't remember any of them. Of course, there's the Irish singing. Yeah, that was great.
There's
the Welbeck goal.
Shevchenko.
The Shevchenko.
I think it's been a good group
Russia
stage
as well.
The which one, sorry?
The Blazikowski one against
Russia. Oh, that was great. Yeah,
I think it's been a kind of good to very good group stage.
Pretty much anything in the pod. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Quality.
All right. Okay, now, well, the group stages aren't finished yet. No, indeed not. There's still Group D to go. Two exciting games there. France, who are just ahead on goal difference of England, are going to be up against Sweden, who are already out, of course, while England play Ukraine. Now, what are we going to talk about first? Let's do the big France-Sweden game. Spurs' new manager. Again, that's not Euro 2012 talk, but that's what they're saying, Laurent Blanc. And what does he bring to this particular party? Well, a French side that looked good coming into the tournament and really seemed to be revving up and stepping up a gear or two in their second game, John.
Yeah, they played very well against, well, Ukraine after the downpour. And you'd imagine they're going to have too much for Sweden. And you'd imagine that France will score enough goals to keep them clear of England and top the group.
Right. Especially as they now have the motivation to do so because they know Spain finished top.
I see.
But,
yes.
There is that. If they finish second, I think they play their quarterfinal and semi-final in Donetsk, which is where they're based. So there's slight logistical advantages there.
Right.
Comfort, knowing where you're playing,
yep.
Being familiar with it.
Right.
But I think they've also, going into tomorrow's game, Debuchy, Menez and Mexes, I think they're all one card away from being suspended for the next game. So what does Blanc do? Does he rest them or does he risk them?
I don't know. And what about Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who when asked who's going to win the championship now in Sweden's absence, says, I don't give a... I'm going on holiday. But before that, he's got this game here, and he'll be fired up for this. He'll have a point to prove, won't he?
He's already on his holidays. He said so.
Hmm. All right, Zlatan. Never more dangerous than when he's on his holidays, of course. No pressure for the Swedish. Hmm? All right. Okay, England... The whole thing is to avoid playing Spain, but to do that, you've got to score more goals than France do. How do you think that's going to go, John?
To be honest, I don't think that'll come into the thinking because it will be a reasonably close game, I think. I was sort of picturing, when coming into the tournament, I thought the best thing we'll look in the group stage will be against France because they tend to look better against the stronger sides and you can play that kind of backs to the wall card. And it's when they come up against perhaps the teams that they should be better than, like your Swedens and in this case Ukraine, they look a bit scratchy and think sort of Algeria and Slovenia in the last World Cup where they just looked awful. But against Slovenia anyway, got the result they needed. And you sort of
Whereas against a good side like Germany, they were
absolutely... yeah, that's where the argument falls down. But yeah, you sort of sense that they'll do enough, 1-0 maybe, and yeah, won't worry themselves with trying to outscore anybody because they won't be able to.
Is there a danger that England are getting a bit ahead, not England the team, but people in England are getting a bit ahead of themselves?
Do you think that Sweden win has been taken a little bit?
I don't know, I just get the impression that most people are kind of looking at Ukraine thinking, yeah, it's just a matter of whether we can finish above France or whether they rather. That's a bit dangerous against the host. I mean, I know they might not have Shevchenko, but they're not a bad side. You can imagine how intimidating the atmosphere will be. I think they'll lose, they're out. It's not inconceivable, is it?
Mm. The intimidating atmosphere didn't seem to bother France
much. When Menez scored, the atmosphere just died. I mean, partly because I think the rainstorm and everything, but it was remarkable how quiet the ground went immediately after that. So,
If Shev is out as well, that is a huge loss.
Yeah,
I mean, he's so much about... What they've been coming forward. But from England's point of view, well, there's all sorts of other questions. Okay, they had that big win over Sweden, but in terms of playing like the other big teams do, dominating possession and actually putting more than, five, six? What's the record of England passes so far at this tournament? Is it six?
Wasn't it for the goal, for Welbeck's goal?
Well, how many was that?
I think it was about six or seven.
Right, okay. But those kind of aspects there, is that something we should just be completely disregarding with this England team or looking for those things to come right as well?
You should never disregard being able to keep a football. But I do think there's a kind of acceptance of England's limitations. Clearly, Rooney will help that, as has been said.
You mention Rooney. You mention Rooney because it's a winning team coming off that victory over Sweden. After your thoughts on Rooney's form at the moment, Rob, in our last pod together, I'm wondering if you think he should actually go into the side or maybe sit on the subs bench ready.
I'd definitely start him. He's still England's best attacking player. All I said was I don't think he played as well in open play for United as was generally perceived last season. However, he's still, by a distance, England's best attacking player. So I would definitely start him. It was interesting that on ITV, both Roy Keane and Roberto Martinez said they wouldn't start him.
Right.
Which I found really surprising. I just don't think England... I understand the logic up to a point, but I don't think England are anywhere near good enough.
What is the logic? Don't change your winning team?
Well, partly because, and partly just to... Not just that, but partly because Carroll and Welbeck have played so well, not just the fact England won, but the kind of the manner of their goals, and also, no, I'm not sure what the logic is.
Well, that's logic right there. What do you think, John?
No, I agree with Rob. I don't see how you can keep him out of the side. And English managers over the course of the past decade and more have shown that they're not they are perfectly prepared to change winning teams to bring back the established names, and Rooney's the most established name we've got in the sort of attacking lineup, and that's why I'll be back in.
I think when Hodgson came in, one of the reasons why I wanted to start with Cahill and Terry rather than and leave Rio at home was because they have a good, well, they developed a good partnership at club level, and perhaps, you know, Rooney and Welbeck have developed some kind of synchronicity and chemistry at United, which I think, you know, will come easier than Welbeck and Carroll, which is a partnership which has only had, what, 13 training sessions to get to know each other. So
the last game Rooney and Welbeck started together was that I think was that madcap 4-4 against Everton, and they scored an outstanding goal where it was a bit like York and Cole in Barcelona, step over, return pass, and then finish. So they clearly are developing a decent understanding.
Mm-hmm. All right then. All right. And the other big question, of course, is Theo Walcott. Does he start?
No, he's someone I'd definitely leave on the bench. I just think the nature of his impact, the importance of only drawing the game potentially. I think if you start him, then what impact subs have you got? Not many, really. Carroll, I suppose. And how many times have you seen Walcott start for England and do very little? I just thought he was so good as a sub.
I think Milner, for all his workmanlike tactical stuff, he does at least cover a suspect Glenn Johnson quite well.
Wow. That brings us to the end of today's Football Daily. Tuesday brings not only the final instalment of the group stage, but also a paper review of what those crazy Continentals have been putting on their front pages so far. Woof. And, of course, come the end of the day, there'll be another brand spanking new Euro 2012 Football Daily rounding up the last two quarter-finalists and exactly how they got there. Hopefully you'll be joining us for that. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben, to Rob Smythe, John Ashton and James Horncastle, and we'll see you in 24 hours.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.